the Sync Summit in Olympia for 2016 is definitely going to involve a walk of the tree on the full moon on August 18th. It is definitely going to involve a Radio 8 Ball show on August 19th. I don't know who the music's going to be, and I don't even know what the venue is going to be 100% right now. And beyond that, we are going to have some amazing conversations. And if anyone who's listening to this at this point, if you have listened to all this bullshit, then you are exactly the kind of person we want to come up with an idea for a conversation and lead that conversation. Because we think, obviously, we think the conversation itself is valuable. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking into computer screens at
odd hours 12, of the morning.
1 and 3 and 2 in the morning.
It's 3:10.
3 yeah. in the morning.
That's fine, man.
So
when we hang up, I think I'm going to edit Keter.
Okay. Well, explode, man.
I've been away all week and I'm
Alan Green is the tippity top of the toppermost of the poppermost.
When you say it like that, I'm cutting the umbilical cord. All right.
Wow. It doesn't feel like, when you say cutting in response to that, it doesn't feel like an umbilical cord.
Hey, so I know, Will, you got to go, but Andres, I do want to hear you. So like, you're just basically saying, like, hey, look, the people that are listening, you know, like, whatever, man, you know what's up. Come. Like, it's fucking awesome.
I'm just saying that.
That's it. It's like the fucking.
I'm just saying that the people who listen to this thing, that the campaign of the Indiegogo campaign, like you were saying, it's not about, like, yes, we're trying to raise money to put on a great party for you. And Sync is about broadening the context all the time. And for this Sync Summit, I am, based upon on all the Radio 8 Ball shows I've done in the last one, Sync Summit, I know that the next great insight is not going to come from, well, I know you, Alan. I know you're full of great insights, and the next great insight for this one isn't going to come from you, just like mine yours isn't going to come from me. It's going to come from the next Misty Greer who wanders into our midst that we never knew before. It's going to, or, you know, it's going to, the next Patrick Savek or the next Virgil, it's going to be people who you didn't know existed, right, but are paying attention to this shit. And you create a venue and you create an opportunity for a conversation. And then you get out of the way unless you really have something to contribute. And this is really about, you're talking about my dad. This is about seminars. That's what the seminars that he, the dream seminars that he was, that became the seminars that Evergreen still kind of runs on in some kind of way. And, but the dream seminars involve dreams in them. And it was all about, you know, it's a conversation between some people who know about the subject enough to say, like, oh, you know what? That's a cool sync for you, but that's bullshit because that's not the way it is. So the way David corrected me about Netzach in the tree walk.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I'm glad that's, I feel like that's a valuable moment.
It's a really valuable moment. I spend a lot of my time doing that to other people. I think.
Okay, so can I ask you? Well, sorry, I've totally forgot. I did something tonight that I feel like you might not be happy with. Because I know this year's like.
Oh man, if you were my girlfriend right now, I would be like, my heart would have just like sunk right into my stomach. I did something tonight you might not be happy with. Oh, that's
no, because you know you edited the sync, you edited the tree walk videos. So, and I'm just, so basically, for people listening or for Will, so like, you know, Basically, Andras edited the videos. He did the hard part of going in, finding the two different shots, editing all that stuff together, like looking over all the footage and editing it down to like 8 to 12 minutes, right? By just trimming that shit down, making it manageable. I came in and so I didn't like credit myself or anything. I was just like, oh, I'm just gonna drop in like where. So now Will Morgan's speaking. I'm gonna put Will Morgan's name under it. Now whatever, right? Just put a few little graphics on it. But on some of the earlier videos, what I was doing is like, okay, I feel like this could be trimmed down a little bit here, or I feel like I could tighten it a step further, or whatever. Anyway, in the last few that I've done, I haven't done that. I haven't trimmed it all. But like, say, like when Scott Onstott's talking. He says, I covered this in my Secrets in Plain Sight video. So I show in the corner, like
Oh, I
that
like
clip
that.
from his Secrets in Plain Sight video. So like the
I love that.
graphics are popping
I love
up
that.
like while he's talking. He's like, oh, I covered this in
Yes.
Boom. So I play that little clip, but it's while he's talking. And that was just like a simple thing. But then I edited something else at the end as you go like, oh, it's as if you this is kind of a little goofy, but I think it actually looks really cool. You say, you make this silly comment about being in a spaceship and going through a stargate, and you're like, oh, I just zoom through the trees, like zoom, right?
Jesus,
And I
yeah.
just added a little special effect there, just for like a fraction of a second, but it's just enough that it's kind of fucking hilarious.
Already, I love it. I
All
love
right.
it.
But
And
now,
it's,
okay,
yeah.
so then the one I did tonight was
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Chokma, right? So
How did you, what did you think about how it ends? Did you
oh,
like
I
the,
love that. I love that. I love that. I love that
okay.
for real. Like when she what she says, beautiful, beautiful ending. But okay, so there's a part where I think it's Danny Columbo says to Ezra Sansweil is playing
About the
the music, and he goes, oh, I think that's the Mac Startup. And then he says, oh, Brian Eno wrote the Mac Startup music and got $1 million and all this stuff. And Ezra's like, oh, that does sound like it. I wonder if it's the same thing. He goes, we should fact check that. Well, I did fact check that a few weeks ago. Okay. And while it's completely wrong, the true story is fucking crazy. That Apple, so the original startup music for Apple was this like religiously outlawed musical note. They say it's this thing called a tritone,
The
which
devil's chord.
the devil's chord, right?
Yeah, it's a purple haze. Bum 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 bum.
Gotcha. But he's
That.
up. So, okay. So, but is he playing at the same time? Okay. But so again, I don't know fucking know music. I just know the interesting story. So, okay. So, what they're saying is,
My recorder just stopped working.
cool. So the thing is that now bear in mind, Apple computer, bitten Apple. Their first price of their first computer was $666, right? Like that was actually how much they charged for their first computer. Again, I'm not worried about Satanists or anything like that. I just think it's interesting. So this was obviously a motif they're going for. Bitten Apple, $666, and the guy who actually wrote the music, he tells this whole story about how they not only made it a tritone, but they mathematically designed it to be the most perfect tritone, which apparently he was saying, like on pianos, you actually can't play this note anymore. Is that they've redesigned the piano, you can't do it. This guy mathematically went in and played the perfect representation of this note that was apparently like banned by the church. So again, fully going full head hog into this thing, right? He said the problem is it's like a really disharmonious noise. He's like, and to hear that every time it starts up, he's like, and it was also like back then the computers crashed a lot. So he's like, every time you restart your computer, you'd hear this noise. He goes, you did, it would get annoying. He's like, so he needed a sound that if your computer crashed, instead of worrying about like, oh, I fucking hate this computer, it crashed, that it had to give you this like zen moment of going like, everything's okay. Everything's okay. Right? So he made the sound to be like this zen, peaceful noise on the Mac startup. So he redesigned the Mac noise. And from the devil's chord or whatever, right? So I just think that's fascinating. So I found this great interview of him talking about it. And I edited it down to about like 1 minute and 45 seconds. And when Ezra goes, we should fact check that, I cut to this video clip.
Oh, why would you think I wouldn't like that? Oh, I love that.
Because I feel like it takes you out of
No, because that's because it because we're in choke because it, it's because it's all backwards.
Right.
So by taking you can't at that point
like it's the last. It's like right. You're watching for like a few hours and you're watching straight Tree Walk, and then in the very last one, just before the end, suddenly like this other video pops up. Is that weird?
No. No, I mean it's weird, but it's right.
It felt right. It felt like this is a subject that's really interesting that I don't know how to address. And this guy addresses it. He addresses it in a minute and a half. Let's drop it in. So you get to see how cool it is that Apple's based off this other thing. And it's clearly not. He says it's a C chord and he explains what he wrote and blah, blah, blah.
Well, I think it's going to – the thing that bothers me about the Synchronize season two is – the fact of how wrong we are, but I love how willing to show how wrong we are.
Right.
Because that's a jumping off point for a conversation.
Right. In the heat of the moment, I said this thing, which turns out to not be true. Here's the truth. Right. We're standing around bullshit.
Am I still wrong about this?
Right.
But no one here is saying like, you know, whatever, you know, like,
right.
Blah, blah, blah.
I didn't make up the thing about Brian Eno because I was wrong. It's true. Look it up. Do you know, like,
yeah.
they've hidden that knowledge.
No, right, like, actually, I said this thing and then I did the research. I fact checked myself. I realized I was wrong. This is part of a process.
Right.
And this rigorous... it's not even a willingness. It's a rigorous obsession with exposing our work.
Yeah.
It actually is – it makes me think – it's a strange thing because I come from a family of scientists and I'm not a scientist. But it makes me feel like – that there's some weird way that what we're doing does adhere to some kind of some version of the scientific method, because any good synchhead is happy to be proven wrong.
Right. Cause then like, here's the thing. When I realized that I had the wrong key for Synchronize episode one, after I made a whole 15 minute thing about it, it was like, well, wait a second. So I can make a connection out of anything. Like, am I actually, is that right. A meaningful coincidence, or am I just spinning a story out of like, okay, give me 5 plot points and I'll make a story out of it.
But well, that's the truth. That's the truth of your father, Andras. That's like what he basically said. Anybody
can make a truth out of anything.
Right. And you can see how some total stranger's dream relates to what you're going through. And how if you had had the same dream, you would have interpreted it in relationship to where you are. The really powerful things that we love in life, like the Beatles or like Stanley Kubrick, or the ones that have multiple points of view or have been. And it's like it's an easy answer. It's like a no-brainer. Like these things that can be interpreted differently mean a lot to a lot of different people. It's really simple. But at the same time, it's absolutely beautiful. And it's so simple that the majority of us don't revel in its beauty often enough. Can I go to sleep now, y'all?
You can revel and unravel.
I put what I had for...
But you can't unravel. You can never unravel. You can only unravel.
I think we've all hit this a similar sort of spot.
We started out with the invocation of the divas, and we should end with... in the same way.
Well, it's the invocation of exposing the raw truth, for sure.
Okay. Well,
what?
Now I'm terrified.
What? Why? Why?
Why would I be terrified? The raw truth. I'm telling you, it's a nightmare.
Well, in the sense of the truth of us being, you know, I think like something I realized is that there's the. All right, well, yeah, and Will, I'm sorry. I know you want to go ahead. I just think it's interesting, like. Something I realized as you were talking and about all this sort of stuff is that obviously every one of us has a sort of nature to be the showman. You know, there's that nature of it, right? Where you're like, okay, I want to – even Will, you know, you might not be – you know, you made Andras Jones's archetype as the showman shaman, right? But you are the same thing because you have – you know, there's this recognition of the same thing because you have a show. You've done podcasts. You've done blogs. You make videos. You put yourself out there. But in the same sort of way, right? So it's like in a different sort of way, but in basically doing the same thing. We all have this sort of this in common. So it's like something we can geek out on about being creative about it. But also there's the shamanic, like the interest in actually pursuing something. And what I realized is I see whenever I think about like, is there any way I could actually do this for a living? And I look at anyone who's doing anything remotely close. I see like, well, no, they have to put up this facade that they're this thing that you can trust on. Like, I got my shit figured out. And let me tell you, you know, how you
what,
too.
What your shit should be.
Right, exactly. And it's like, I can't do that. I'm like we're doing in a way, we're doing like, as you said, scientific. Well, you know, you,
but
you know,
no, I had this,
Andra
I had
said
this
like
insight.
The scientific method. I'm thinking like when you're a kid and you learn math and they say like, show me the work is what another expression you use. Like we're showing our work. It's like saying like, hey, I'm not just going to tell you, you know, 110 divided by 4 is 65, because if you thought about it, it's not. So, okay, let me show you my work. And then but you could have say, oh yeah, right there. That's where you got that wrong. Or
right.
Yeah.
We're calling ourselves. Everybody else is saying how right they are. Like everybody else is going off of, oh, like this just proves that I'm more right. I told you so. This I told you so attitude, especially in alternative fringe, like work that we are a part of, is gotten into this rut of I told you so. So it's kind of refreshing. The fact that we're like, oh shit, we said that. Well, we were wrong, yo.
Well, here's the thing. It's not wrong to be the first person in the room who realizes that what you said was wrong.
Which, yeah.
That means that you have actually, that's called integrity.
Right. I mean, that's what's going
that's
on.
Just it. This
I mean,
shouldn't be like here's this is never a thing I've thought about until doing this synchronized where we're like, wait, do we actually show this? And it's like, wait, of course, it's just the thing you do. You just like,
yeah, is we show we are engaged in something that is dubious at best. It's only its only value is if it's actually true.
Right, so I have to show you.
So, and that we believe it's true. We're part of the experiment. Our belief in the experiment. Look, if I was, God, I'm going to set myself up for, but if I was the handler of this experiment.
Cough, cough.
Involved in it, believed. It was true, so you could get the actual response, and our response is artistic. That's why I, you know, that's why I'm, well, if I was the handler, I would live better. And now
if you
I'm,
went.
Whatever, if I was the handler, I would live better, but I would probably, actually, if I was going to be the handler, I would probably set myself up to live the way I actually live. So. I think it's just too obvious. I'm too obvious a handler.
Listen, it's fine. You can be the handler. Just pass enough of it along.
I don't
know. We've become so out of sorts that we want a CIA plant.
Well,
in our
we're just like, listen. Right.
It's dude, like, if you're CIA, just tell us that you're CIA. So we could CIA a little bit with you.
No. I don't mean it like that. No, man. Like, so that's interesting.
Oh, Will Morgan, you are going to go well in Hollywood. I want to just cut that little section of this and put that out on, like,
Jan Urban's.
Like, I just wanted to put it. I wanted to put it on, like, on Shuffle Function on Air Force One.
That's hilarious.
All right.
I just want to CIA a little with you. If you're CIA, I just want to CIA a little with you. That's really the dirtiest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
That really is.
Let's CIA a little. I mean, come on. If you're going to CIA, why not do it with me? All right, I'm out.
No.
Can I go to sleep,
please? Yes, you can go. Yes, you can go.
We'll
blackmail you with that soundbite.
Namaste. Namaste.
Bule CIA.
Peace. I'm getting the handle.
So cool. So you're down with that edit, though, as far as, like, the Macintosh thing?
Yeah.
Cool.
Right.
Like I said, it only feels weird because it's like if it was a decision that was made earlier, but it feels good. It feels like,
honestly, that's why I'm so bummed that we didn't have for the whole Radio 8 Ball show, because if you had had that footage,
right, I would have done synchronized very differently. Like if I had synced, right,
it would have been so integrated.
Right.
So.
Right, because I feel like in a sense, like especially the first few episodes, I'm essentially the additional context that I'm trying to show is something with the tone color alchemy, which is hilarious because that's the shit that's completely wrong. Like, so I'm using that as the context when I had all this other context I didn't know I had. It's fascinating.
So, I know you probably have to go too, but.
I would like to piss and get some more coffee, but I'm in a rush.
I have an idea. So I could find an artist for the next Radio 8 Ball show, but I kind of want to do, I think I could put together like what we did, the posies thing.
Mm-hmm.
I could put together a better version of that super group and do Lifehouse.
No.
And I think for the Sync Summit, I'm leaning towards that rather than booking, an individual singer-songwriter. And then, but that does mean showing the Lifehouse Matrix.
Sure. Why not? I think, listen, that's why I like the idea of, again, obviously if we raise the money, but they like the idea if we could actually rent out that space for a full day that we had, like, I'm sure you have been to, like, art galleries and exhibitions where, like, I remember, you have the different still images, the paintings, the portraits, the whatever on the wall, but then you might have a room which is a video room. It just runs. It just runs. So if you come in there at 3 p.m., you're catching Lifehouse Matrix. If you come in there at 5 p.m., you're catching something David made. If you're and just sort of have this.
So here's what I want to do is I want to do the Radio 8 Ball and then show Lifehouse Matrix. Like.
Oh, okay. Got you. Show it at what
Friday
point?
Night. Show it after. Like, have the hangout in the space and show it in the space from after the show.
Okay. Sure.
Or maybe half before and half after. I don't know. It depends how we can figure it out. But I want
to,
like.
So it's interesting that you would be willing to do that with something you. So David had a really big issue when you had proposed him the idea of doing half the movie before and half the movie after. And I get it. I actually, like, you don't want to break the flow of an experience.
Yeah, but in this case, you wouldn't be breaking the flow.
Well, right, exactly.
See, injection.
That's the distinction between your mindset and David's. And so no one's wrong. I'm saying David feels like he's created.
David could control the environment.
Well, right, what I was saying is right. Exactly. If David could control the environment, he would say, hey, this is a piece of art that I want to show. And once I want people to fully immerse themselves into this artistic thing I made. Whereas your take on it is, I want to add some extra context to this ongoing story. So, you know, where it's the sort of thing of like, fuck, you could do in between each question while people are changing or whatever, or you're filming someone behind the stage getting extra.
Well,
you could show.
No, we can do that.
Right.
In the TV show.
Oh, okay. Right. So like, what I'm saying is like if you showed, here's question number five. Like, so here's question number one. What's the first song on there? Bob O'Reilly. Right? So, okay, you have question number one and then Bob O'Reilly or vice versa. Then question number two and then, what is it, Going Mobile?
Yeah, but that's not – we won't do – like that's what I'm saying is I want to do eight because it's only going to be eight songs.
Right. There's probably 20-something tracks, right? Right.
So we're going to do eight songs and they're going to be songs that have video with them.
Oh, my God. You're talking about you're showing the video while they're playing the song.
I'm talking about us on TV, in our TV show, showing the video or playing the song. If we could do it production-wise in the room, if we could afford to do it production-wise in the room, then yeah, but we may not be able to do it production-wise in the room, but we will be able to do it.
Yeah.
In post.
Right, it brings in that whole copyright issue, but I think that's, it's totally, like, so you're saying, like.
I think the Who will love this, as I'm thinking about it.
But do you think, like, realistically speaking, what do you think would be the odds of getting, so would your hope be to get like a pre-recorded question from someone, Townsend or Daltrey or even Star?
No.
The Star count?
It would have to be Townsend. Or, I mean, I don't even know who I would get as a Who aficionado. I would go a totally different way. I'd just find someone.
But you'd have to find someone affiliated with the Matrix, then. I mean, you know, I'm sure, like, Joe Pantoliano is, like, I've met him.
I met him, too. He's fucking great. Get Joe Pantoliano to ask a question, that would be fucking awesome.
Right? And I think he's totally reachable.
And he is very Who-ish. He doesn't look Who-ish, but he is actually very Who-ish.
And then you have this interesting sort of if he were to be the one to ask it, we go back to the – we actually would re-reference –
go back to that the steak scene, right?
The steak scene?
Like where he's selling out and he's like, look, as long as I can eat this – I know that this steak is fake.
Right.
But I like it.
Right. Well, you're right. You would add in the context of saying, so in this one, there's this thing where the girl asks the question, am I living in a dream, blah, blah, blah. And then Shmushkin says, you know, I think actually you want to stay in the dream. It seems to me you'd want to stay here, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, with this idea that you're not really trying to wake up from it. So you're just asking what it is, but it. And which is still, it's still a completely valid question. What is this? And then the question of, are you trying to wake up from it? But you sort of, you have this one question, and then that gets re-referenced in Synchronized 8 when we have the Democracy Now! Quote, and he's saying, people don't want to wake up from the dream because they'd have to face the harsh realities of the world around them that they just don't want to fucking acknowledge. People would rather, you know, like I said, you saw how easy it was for this conversation to slip into fucking Rocky and
yeah, I know.
Like, the most fucking, like, whatever, when we started off in this sort of, and whatever, like,
hey,
I loved it. I loved it. I enjoyed the conversation. I enjoyed the conversation. What I'm saying, though, is, again, showing our work. At some point, I realized I'm enjoying this conversation, but we allowed ourselves to slip, you know, in one respect, allowed ourselves to slip back into that dream.
Yep.
While we're talking, right? Like, it just, you actually watch the progression, the slide into this other space. Culminating with Will's joke, in a lot of ways, culminating with Will's joke about the CIA a little with you or whatever, right? So you have this sort of like all that context with Joe Pantoliano asking a question, you know, should I have woke, you know, you know, should I wake up? Whatever, right?
Yeah, I mean, should your pants.
Right. Should I enjoy my steak? Whatever.
What's so funny is that I know I got off on a little weird tangent about Boise and Boise, but I was thinking about Boise and Joyzy.
Okay.
Like, I've never heard anyone say Boise before.
I've seen Doug make references to it as the B-O-Y-S-E-E a number of times.
Yeah, I never really picked up on it, and it was it was you know, that same thing. Like, oh, yeah, I've been wrong. I want to clarify that. I've been absolutely wrong.
Right,
you live there.
Right,
I'm not going to disagree with you about where you live is how where you live is pronounced.
Exactly.
Like. But every time in my entire life I've ever heard that town pronounced, it's called Boise. That's got to be fucking annoying. You know? I mean, it's like people telling me that people who think I live in Seattle.
Right.
I live in Olympia. I mean, Boise and Boise is a little bit harder, or maybe easier, because it's just one word. It's one, you know. I'm going to say it Boise from now on. So, this is like an after-school special in that I've learned a lesson. Why do you have a Detroit Tigers
poster? Is that poster? Detroit Tigers? It's this guy, Ben Goray. He listens to our show. He made a bunch of this stuff. Actually, it's awesome. Like, it's my lighter case. It's like,
that's cool.
This part glows in the dark, so it's like the screen. That Detroit thing is alternate. Do you know, like, Philly's blunt wraps? Like, if you take the clear plastic and then there's like the seal, like the seal, like it's like round with wings, goes around the cigar. I don't know how I would show this to you. Yeah, that's as far as my cord goes. But basically, it's a collage out of like 300 Philly blunt wrappers, orange and grape. So the D is the grape wrappers, and the orange is the orange wrappers. He also made these like.
Well, that's the David plate behind you, right?
Yeah, he also made these like crazy geometry, this like big origami thing. He does origami out of like metal cans. Really, just neat shit. That's a David plate. That's a Baruch Goldberg made that. He painted that Tree of Life.
Hmm.
That's a Melissa made that. That's my grandfather's helmet from the World Trade Center that says CIA on it. See, my grandfather was actually a construction worker on the World Trade Center. Can you see that?
That's awesome.
It says World Trade Center curtain wall. Culver Associates Incorporated, CAI, but then if you read it across the center, right?
CIA.
C, and then the towers is the I and A. CA, whatever. No, I know my grandfather wasn't a CIA agent. I actually knew my grandfather very, very well. It's just hilarious because if I saw this, do you know what I mean? Again, it goes into how would you interpret things?
Right.
This to me is like, holy shit, the dude worked in the World Trade Center and has a CIA helmet.
Right.
But as I said, if I wasn't as close to my grandfather as I was.
My grandfather worked at, you know, in the MIT labs in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. He created lasers. He was also almost called before the House American on Activities Committee. So, you know, he was on both sides of that nonsense. And because his grandfather was friends. His father was like friends with Lenin and Trotsky. Like they were buddies.
You've read Deadeye Dick by Kurt Vonnegut, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned it to me not too long ago. I don't remember what you said. And I was just like, you know, most Vonnegut's I've read and reread. Deadeye Dick, I only read the one time. And I was just like, you know, maybe I'll do that. So I did. And it wasn't like as I love Vonnegut books. There's a reason probably it didn't stand out in my memory. It's just not, I don't know, there's something about it. It doesn't have or whatever, that's maybe the mindset. It didn't have the same quality that I remembered or that I get out of his other books, but there was some interesting stuff. And it's the idea is that his whole thing is that his father was friends with Hitler. Like that his father was an artist in Austria.
Right.
Like this, you know, painter and was friends with Hitler and was like, for years that was like, we're friends with one of the most powerful men in the world. Like, it's like if your dad was friends with JFK or something, and everyone's like, we're friends with the Kennedys. Yep, that's right. We know them. And then one day they're like getting thrown out of the town because everyone's like, you're friends with Hitler, huh? Well, now suddenly Hitler's not just a powerful politician. He's we view him as a dictator or whatever. So there's just funny synchronicities there. He also specifically references the town I'm living in that book.
Interesting. Yeah. Vonnegut would have loved the sink thing, I think.
Maybe yes, maybe no.
He was pretty
outspoken against any use of like drugs or escapist sort of
That was Vonnegut. There's two of every artist. There's the ego, which is the one who takes all the blows. And then there's the artist that sings the songs that we like. The artist who sings the songs that we like, if he was born when we, like in the age when sometime between you and I were, when we, you and I were born, he'd be with us milking this for all it was worth. He was milking this.
Oh, well, sure. Dude. I've read everything he's ever written, and he has like plenty of like personal essays and autobiographical stuff. And some of his novels, he integrates autobiographical stuff. So he's very open. So like, even though he's presented this great, like, basically like atheistic, you know, humanist, you know, humanitarian in the sense of like, let's just treasure humanity and not think about, you know, I don't believe in anything spiritual or whatever, right? Like anything.
That's his shtick.
That's his shtick. But he also talks about his wife being into astrology and incorporates it into his books.
Right.
Why the fuck? You know, like, so is it just that you're inspired and it's a fun notion to play with?
Maybe. Right, exactly.
Maybe that's all it is. And that's
because,
cool.
Because that, I think that's at the core of what he's communicating.
Right.
Is
I don't need like, to believe that it's real. It's fun to entertain and to play with.
I think he's like Tom Robbins. He's like a pre-Tom Robbins Tom Robbins. But he is a pagan cynic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he enjoys being a cynic the way a pagan enjoys eating a fucking pussy.
Is that a pagan thing to enjoy?
Or a peach. I was going to say peach. I went with pussy.
No, I wasn't sure if that made me a pagan. No.
I'm just saying, yes, it does. It absolutely makes you a pagan. Just like
it's
enjoying
atheist
walking.
Not believe in pussy?
No. Atheist? How is atheists and pagans are just dealing with semantics.
Okay.
Because atheists still believe in trees and air and water.
Sure, okay.
You know, like, you don't deny science when you become an atheist, and science is pagan. Dealing with, it's saying elements are real and we respect them enough to figure them out. And if you're not a scientist and you approach nature that way, then you're a pagan.
Right. No, I get that totally.
An earth worshiper.
I guess, right. It's funny because I guess I'm thinking of the sort of professed ideology behind it. But yeah, essentially it's the same practice. That's true. Because, see, I consider myself not an atheist, but I consider that to me the – like things make sense like a periodic table, exactly, like elements. Like, oh, okay, this is a thing. And if you understand how that thing works,
you can do other things.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. That makes like every facet of, right, the fact that this computer is built off someone going, oh, this has a higher tendency to conduct electricity. And this has a higher tendency to be able to store electromagnetic data on it. And this... And you put it together and you get a fucking computer. I get that. If someone was to say, oh, this tarot card and this, it's like, yeah, I get that.
Right. Systems.
Yeah. But so I was getting hung up on the idea that the professed systems are different. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah. So it was funny because I was thinking, atheist and pagan as sort of the different terms. And it's interesting because then you took pagan in a different direction. You took it into like a nature sense, which I think the actual term pagan
pagan is the four directions and the four elements.
But
and
I think
the
pagan,
iron,
the word pagan actually just air, means like citizen or something. Like it's like
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, in the same way that maybe Indian means human, or like, I mean, it's like people ascribe meanings to different things.
Right. So Merriam-Webster is saying a follower of polytheistic religion as in ancient Rome, heathen is the one who has little or no religion and who delights in sensual pleasures and material goods, an irreligious or hedonistic person.
Yeah,
wow. Merriam-Webster has a fucking agenda on that one, huh?
Yeah.
That's kind of fucking gross. But here we go. Origin of pagan from Middle English, from late Latin paganus, from Latin civilian country dweller, from pagus country district akin to pangery to fix. Basically, it's like you're a villager. It's like, oh, here's someone who lives in the town.
This is oppressor language.
Absolutely,
you know, it's cop language. That's like saying thug.
A person, you're a person who with no religion who delights in sensual pleasures and material goods. Really?
Yeah. Like you don't?
Right. Right.
You're
tell
the
me
guy
tell me again about your 875th edition dictionary. How many of those have you sold?
Jesus, man. I do think we're doing amazing work.
Yeah, same here. I feel good about all this stuff. So I've been feeling this weird mix of like overwhelmed, but also like really inspired. So, the work feels good. Like, I don't know how I'm supposed to do it all. I don't know how the fuck we could possibly do all this stuff.
I think we just created it. We need 5 Wallys and 5 U's. They're out there. I'll tell you this. I'm going to, for the Boise Sync Summit, I can't take the days off work, so I won't be there on the Friday and the Saturday. I'll probably have to leave on the Thursday. But I'm going to drive out on for the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll come out and make it a thing. Even if I only get to hang out for like 1 whole day or 2 whole days.
Gotcha.
I want to be a part of that.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be, I think that's going to be amazing. And I think it's going to be it's going to be important. I don't want to do Olympia. Don't want to do the Olympia thing without it being connected to the Boise thing.
Well, yeah, no. I think so. I mean, I think it's really important that they're, you know, I feel like they're interesting in like different types of experiences and experiments. And, you know, it's funny because I think I know the experience I want is more of the sort of vacation-y aspect, like what we used to do, which is, you know, hey, let's hang out. Let's take a few days and hang out in a cabin. I know Doug, and not just Doug, I think also some of the people who attended Olympia and saw Olympia sort of see the need for, like, well, there should still be something happening. Like, it's not just like, hey, let's all take a vacation together. But like,
well, it's perfect the way this is lining up because I want people to have come to the Olympia Sync Summit with something to share that they want to share.
Right.
And the sync cabin is a great place to workshop that.
Well, and for the record, so Doug doesn't, just for what it's worth, Doug didn't want to call it a sync cabin since it's not in a cabin. And
I get it. Sorry. But it is whatever the thing is that you're doing.
Right. What I'm talking about is I was saying I wanted what was the sync cabin experience, but it's not going to be that. But that's okay. When we're talking about things becoming what they're becoming, you know, to a certain extent take on a life of their own. To a certain extent, you know, Doug's going to shape what his interests are. Other people who are involved are going to shape what their interests are and making it. I think it's going to be fucking awesome. So whatever it is, it's like, I think they're going to be equally, not just equally important, but equally interesting. Like the shame is going to be, obviously, from the cinematic perspective, what's going to be a shame is we're not going to really have the like footage, the documentation on Boise. And that's, again, that's okay. That's,
well, everyone has.
Well, exactly.
You can, if you started the show, if you started the weekend by saying, sort of like the opposite, so like the utopian, the Dionysian version of the like, if you see something, say something.
Oh no, yeah, but yeah,
you know, if you feel something,
that makes me feel so dirty.
Share it,
right.
But there is, I mean, I think that there is, like, that's the shitty thing about the Apollonian vision, is that it ruins the Dionysian use of the same instrument.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, listen, we've done Always Record. I mean, like, the thing is, I'm, I am, by my nature, I am opposed to the idea of being recorded without my consent. That doesn't mean that I don't choose to give my consent to this moment and to say, in this moment, I'm going to be truthful and vulnerable, but I'm also, I'm just putting it on the record. That doesn't, right. That doesn't mean I can't still be staunchly opposed to government spying or any spying, of like the sense of, no, I retain my privacy, and I also can voluntarily rescind my privacy for a few hours every few weeks and share something like that.
Are you picking up on all those?
So,
man, I've been farting up a storm through this whole goddamn thing.
So,
it's been a chilly Monday.
That's hilarious. And that's my point. So it's like there's the moment there's the moment of being.
There's the moment of being what?
You know, it's like, you know, consensual adults can make whatever arrangement they want to make, is basically my philosophy, right? Some people use that to fuck. I use it to, hey, let's talk and have a conversation and be honest with each other, right?
Yeah.
Are you completely, like, embarrassed?
But in the way that an actor is embarrassed, like, I'm enjoying it. I mean, it's perfect. Like, the way a producer, like, I feel like the Rocky of farts right now. Because I physically put myself into this role. And it is archetypal. If you don't think you can relate to this, you're a liar. You're not showing your work.
Exactly right.
I mean, I'm alone in my own apartment. I'm not befouling anyone else's other air. I'm going to be clear about that. Like, if you can't do that at your own fucking desk, what was the internet invented for?
Yeah, precisely.
Like, how does that? All it does is give you comedy and hurts no one. I mean, it's the Bodhisattva of entertainment. The recorded fart in your own room. Compared to atom bombs and, you know, police killings,
yeah,
it's a small crime, and it gives so much, as far as entertainment's concerned. I mean, the only thing would be better if I could figure out a way to light it on fire.
No, I think it's your reaction that I find most humorous.
Well, yes. I'm sure.
It's all good. It's nice. It's you know, I think there's an interesting thing about, you know, at what point we're talking this idea of friendship.
At what point do we cut this? Like, and this doesn't go on the air.
Sure, if you'd like. Yeah, that's fine.
I don't know.
I really don't care.
I'm totally down with the always record ethos. So,
all right, but there's also a point where, like I said, you could say whatever. I'm really doesn't offend me one way or the other.
If there is an episode of Studs Terkel being a drunken idiot out there, I want to hear it.
Who's that?
Studs Terkel.
Yeah.
Oh, he was a radio. He was an interviewer on Chicago radio from like the 1930s till the early thousands. And he wrote books about, and he interviewed like he did books on the working people, and he came out of the world of Woody Guthrie and Alan Lomax and, you know, the FDR, the class of cultural curators who were created by the New Deal. And he was just, you know, it was a voice. He was interested. You should check him out. Studs Terkel. And he just like, by the time, like, ever, as long as I knew him, he was old.
Right. One of those.
Yeah. You know, like in the 1980s, when I was in high school, he was an old guy who was reading books that he wrote. Because he did his shit in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. You know, by the 60s, he was already... The guy, the people in the 60s were reading his books because he was old when they were kids. Like Jimi right. Hendrix was reading Studs Terkel books like we read Howard Zinn or Noam Chomsky.
I get that.
Journalism is a kind of – like that's the whole thing is that journalism's got so fucked up that synchromysticism is a valid form of journalism just because it shows its work and it's honest.
Right. You know, there was an interesting thing. This is not necessarily on the same page, but like when you hit the idea of right, what is journalism, what is science? Is it just the integrity? So like, you know, we talk science is, you know, well, what you think of it is the integrity of like the actual rigor of saying, hey, this is what happened. I did this, and this is what happened.
Right.
Right. Let's show it. Let's prove it. I did this. This happened. Do you want to see? Okay. If you do the same thing and the same thing happens, that's interesting. Now we're, you know, confirming something. Now we're whatever. So it's right. Just all these sorts of ideas are, you know, but the again, journalism is just the idea of the integrity of saying, well, okay, let's get the story as honest as we can.
And that's saying, I went to a place, I saw something, I asked these people these things, this is what they said.
Right.
And this is what everyone else was saying.
But it's interesting. Like, so I've listened to a lot of like old Robert Anton Wilson like lectures, where he used to do this exercise a lot, which I think might be interesting to do at one of our events.
Oh, bring it.
Where he would say, okay, like let's say they were doing like a lecture, or let's say you're showing a movie, whatever, right? Everyone's watching Lifehouse Matrix and there's an intermission or some shit, right? And then everyone goes out in the hallway, some people smoke a cigarette, some people whatever, and they go back in and he says, okay, everyone take out a pen and paper and describe the hallway that you were in with the utmost detail. How long were you on break for? And he's like, how long was the intermission? And Andrew, this is before people had cell phones and, you know, but they still had watches, I'm sure. So it's like, you know, are they looking at them? How long do they feel it's been? And some people would say, oh, the break lasted 5 minutes. Some people would say it lasted 20 minutes. Some people said the hallway was 30 feet wide. Some people said the hallway was 10 feet wide. And saying like, it's just this idea of everyone sort of having this completely different experience when they're not realizing that they're registering an experience. What kind of stimuli are you taking in about what color the wallpaper is or whatever it might be? And it was just, you know, just to show what, how different is the experience that everyone's having. I feel like in the same way, like the journalist, the scientist in us is like, has to hold true to like just the facts on occasion, you know, hey, I played this movie starting at this time. I asked this question, got this answer, you know, whatever it might be, whatever our sync experiments are. But then everything else is just, in a certain extent, us presenting our interpretation of what we saw, which doesn't mm-hmm. make it any more true or, you know, it's why it's interesting, like, showing this idea of being the voice of authority to say this is what happened. But once any interpretation comes in, it starts to become less authoritative, which I'm okay with.
Actually, no, I think it's encoded into the tree walk And it's definitely encoded into Radio 8 Ball, but encoded into the tree walk as it was represented in our films of it. That being the expert in something is not being, like David talks about how strength is not strength in the classic sense. Mm-hmm. But strength is flexibility. And it's that same thing, that being the authority is not being the one who knows. It's being the one who is comfortable in not knowing.
Yeah.
At least in our medium, definitely that's the case. Is the one who's willing to walk into a room and say, you throw three things at me, I can make that into whatever you want. I can make that into what's true. I can make that into what's false. I can make that into what you want me to make it into. Like, you give me three things, I can make anything out of it. And I want to make the truth out of it. That's the art. It is an art that people have made bullshit out of, but we are, I think when I talk about it, it sounds super pretentious, and I don't want to be pretentious about it.
No, I get you, because see, to me, it almost feels like in a way, it almost feels. So I think we got to get rid of the worm of the pretentiousness, because of what I'm feeling is like the very, and to a certain extent, the act of interpreting anything is a pretentious act. To say, you know, let me tell you how this is, but if you can instead say, well, I looked at this and this is what I saw. And I fully understand that you're going to look at it and you might see something different. It's like trying to hold that tone is interesting to me. And then where there's any quote-unquote facts, if possible, to leave those, you know, uninterpreted, they stand as what they are. Which is, you know, I guess the iffy part, but.
Well, they do stand as what they are, and then that becomes a new, and this is why I'm interested in this. Well, I'm interested in it on several levels, but the way I'm interested in, I think it's interesting. I think it's the way I think it's interesting to the world is that it is a new way of looking at film. From a synchromistic standpoint, if you look at the work of Sylvester Stallone, you have to take it in a certain way that you wouldn't have to take it if it was in the Pauline Kael traditional. I think synchromysticism is a form of film criticism, a strain of film criticism that could spawn a new kind of filmmaking. But at this point is really just a very exciting form of film criticism.
Oh, you just said film criticism twice. You said you think it's destined, it's going to be a new form, but
I think it's going to be a new form of film. If it's effective, it creates a new kind of filmmaking.
You're saying right now it's criticism. And it's
when I say criticism, I mean film appreciation.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I think film criticism is bullshit.
Right.
That's why synchromistic film criticism, film appreciation, is exciting to me, because it says a bad film, a good film. It says what all the great filmmakers say. Bad film, good film, doesn't matter. If this moment resonates, then it's useful. And I'm not looking at film as saying this film, like there are films that are just great all the way through. And what I would add to that, this is the one thing I would add to film criticism ever. I say this about Star Wars, and everyone who criticizes film should say this about their whatever film they judge everything against. all Star Wars films suffer from the fact that I'm not 10 years old anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And anyone who cares that much about film was probably moved when they were 10 years old. And the thing that moved them will never happen again.
Well, that's why it's funny, because that's in a way when I enjoyed these conversations about in the last few weeks about RoboCop and Rocky, because probably the last time I saw Rocky, I probably was 10 years old. But it was something that hit a nostalgic sort of memory of me, which right. says less about the movie and more about my memory of what life was like when I experienced it. I said, oh, I remember that was good. I can picture being right. like in this living room, and I can pick, you know, like I can picture this happy moment in my life, the warmness of, you know, that experience.
And at the same the same time, there was someone working just as hard and just as diligently on Robo, like you didn't focus on Weekend at Bernie's.
You didn't just say that.
There's no one else here.
I don't know if I can put this on record. I don't know if it'll be a. How do I tell this to you?
You went. You took a dead friend on a weekend in Vegas or Fort Lauderdale.
It's actually, man. It's a. Now I'm thinking of the symbolism of it. It's fucking poignant. No, basically, I went to visit my family this weekend, and by Sunday, I was sitting with my family, and Weekend with Bernie's came on, and we all sat there and watched it to not really engage
with each other. Oh my God.
It was that bad that it was like, we'll just watch this completely inane, harmless thing.
That's fucked up, man.
It's beautiful. And what I'm seeing is the symbolism. So, it's like, it's to avoid the actual humanity of the moment. We'll just drag around this lifeless thing that pretending it's alive, that it's not. That's fucking deep and fucked up. So fucked up.
I'm so sorry, man. That's the worst. But we do have this synchronicity.
It's not that, good, man. It's fucking.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, that is like we are living in magical times, because that shit just did happen. And that's why we do what we do, why we show our work. Because in the midst of all this bullshit that we would never write or choose to focus on, magical things emerge.
And it's a realization. Like, the thing is, this has given me a lot to process. Like, the sort of realization, not only having to admit out loud the sort of intensity of the situation, but to also realize the underlying symbolic meaning of the intense situation.
Lazarus, man. That's Bowie's last thing. Is Black Star and Lazarus. I'm not even into Bowie, and I get that. That says the guy is a fucking artist. Like, I definitely would not like Jackson Pollock if I just saw his stuff and I didn't know who he was. Know the story? I love it. Great. I get it. It's awesome. Bowie's like that.
I also, see, here's the thing. I get now why people would like have theories about like Elvis is still alive or whatever. Wouldn't you like? Here's what I'm gonna say. It's not that I
If you were
think.
David Bowie, you'd think you wouldn't you just make yourself like if you're gonna if you were going to do this, wouldn't you fucking do it?
Right. Like as a performance art piece, like I'm gonna.
Yeah.
Right. Like which is what he did. So it's like not that I believe this, like I'm think it's totally possible that he died. It's also totally possible that he didn't. And it's like whatever. Good for you if you did. I hope you're enjoying
Right.
this moment.
Yeah, if you're a Ziggy Stardust, if you're like Major Tomming it somewhere.
Right, if you can be a rock and roll suicide without actually killing yourself, but just killing yourself in the eyes, killing your character, good for you.
Yeah, out like out Andy Kaufman, Andy Kaufman. I'm trying to do it.
Well, you and I were bad at the.
You are really good at honoring Shmushkin. I appreciate it. You have fully committed to Shmushkin, and I really appreciate that because you might be the only other person besides me. Although Will did ask a question, I didn't get to answer it.
What was the question?
Something about what does Shmushkin have to do with white supremacy and
Did he ask
the
that? I
whole
didn't hear
snake
him ask
thing?
that.
That wasn't
I feel like there was a lag coming from Will. Like, I didn't hear what he asked until it was already in the answer.
Well, if I
Was.
was, you know,
So,
I
you want
was
to answer
only
that question now for Will?
I'll answer it very quickly. I answered it in the video, is that Shmushkin aligns with Hode, which is about the containers and about the world as we would have it. And I think that there's a lot of things that I say in that video that I do not like.
In which
But
video? The
I,
Hode video?
in the whole tree walk,
Interesting.
I just don't like watching myself on film. Which is weird because I put myself on film all the time and that's what I want to do. But I know a lot of artists who feel that way too. It's not about whatever.
I can only listen to myself in the editing phase because I'm like, oh, I could take this stupid thing I said out. But
Right.
when I'm listening to my, once the product is finished, I usually skip over myself. I'm like, ugh. Right, I do the same
Right.
thing.
It's just a, it's
Like I'll be
just
listening
like
to an
a
old Always record. I'm like, oh, what David said is so interesting. Oh, what Bill said is so interesting. Oh, what John said is so interesting. Oh God, I'm talking again. Skip forward. It's
I
like, well.
think that might be the thing that future generations won't have. Like they'll grow up with this as a like as an appendage, and they can love it like their own hand, in a way that I can't. But what I was going to say was that Shmushkin, that line about Shmushkin represents the world as I would have it. Is what Shmushkin has to do with how or how not the event we did created all the dark stuff. I don't think it created the dark stuff, but I think that if there's a way that Shmushkin relates to it, I think Shmushkin lives in the place that he's like the opposite of all the happy creatures. So you put all your you you put you created a world full of beloved creatures that were being tortured in the most horrible ways. Shmushkin is I don't want to say an awful person is just he gets to be shallow because nothing bad has ever happened to him.
Right.
And to me, that's paradise. It's a paradise that is totally lost. If I was offered the keys to it, I would probably reject. But I still acknowledge it. I still experience it as a paradise. And that's white privilege. And that's what Shmushkin has to do with how the event we did or didn't create Ferguson, which it didn't.
Right.
But if we were out 50 or 40 something freaky white people crossing the street illegally, Shmushkin is one mustachioed white guy walking out of the 70s, jaywalking every second of his existence. For the good.
Yeah.
Always for the good, you know, and saying, why me? And, you know, but still getting away with, Shmushkin gets away with everything.
Right.
Which is, you know, it's a, you know, ultimately it's, well, he's Jewish, so he's, you know, he's driven by terror, but that's part of the whole thing of Shmushkin, is that he isn't. He's like the one Jew who isn't touched by the Holocaust.
Or who's, right, who's not afraid, who's not, because nothing, I say nothing ever bad would happen.
Right.
It's interesting. So, like, having, again, so I don't know if you want this on record, because now,
We're showing our work. Life's an open book. I don't care.
So I did, he sort of made me, I mean, not you, but like this conversation being like sort of going deep into the actual process on stuff. So I'm realizing, like, I did this, I have this thing I think about sometimes, how do I give you the short explanation here? I basically, when I was starting in high school through about when I dropped out of college, I wrote one really long story that I just kept adding to. It just grew and grew and grew and grew. Like 500 something pages. That's basically like, as an adult looking at it, the way I'd have to describe it, it was basically like fan fiction based on my life. It's totally, this is how I'd like my life to be. Total.
Right. Right. Right.
And, you know.
And that, this is the thing. It's like, this is what I think about Shmushkin. I think about that. If we weren't caught up in this world of criticism of having things having to be great, everyone should do that.
Well, precisely, that's what I was going to say. That in itself doesn't feel wrong, like that I'm wishing, you know, everyone has a fantasy of how they'd like their life to be. Oh, I'd be, well, I'd have $1 million and David Bowie my friend. And
you should integrate that. Everyone should integrate that into their fucking lives.
Right.
Because a world of people infusing their everyday with their dreams, with their nightmare, both, is a world I want to live in.
Right.
That's what we're creating. We're creating a context.
But okay, so then, what's interesting is, so you're talking about this, like, Shmushkin in the context of, you know, the idealized container, and I'm sort of thinking, like, in a way I've done or had done the same thing. I'm sure I do it in other ways that I'm less conscious of or that are less obvious examples. that I, you know, again, all of us still do it. We romanticize and idealize. But nowadays, it's easy for people to do it on the internet. You can put your favorite profile picture out, and you put your, you get to create the idealized
version. By the way, have you seen my latest profile picture?
No.
Nobody's commenting on. It's so sinky. It's like the sinkiest fucking thing, and nobody's commented on it. I'm with a couple of twins between two pillars.
Gotcha.
Like little kid girl twins who happen to be my cousins between these two pillars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally get that.
Nobody's picking up on that shit.
Well, it's also a really small picture, but yeah.
Yeah, well, you know what? If you're not willing to do the work, Jesus. I mean, we all fancy ourselves as if we're detectives, but we are actually beachcombers.
I'm so glad you said that. I think about that all the time.
We're just okay, walking please, along please. A path, picking up shit. Like,
mm-hmm.
We're ambling leisurely through fields that are just thick with synchronicity. We're not scientists. We're not, we're not journalists even. We're poets. We're a new kind of poet.
Well, I think about, you know, again, I'm not the biggest
because it's that rich
person, but I'm like when the idea of the reason I like the sort of metaphor of finding the God in the trash can, because to me, I really think about us as beachcombers. Like, not like saying I think about us as beachcombers, but specifically, like, again, it's the power of music, right? There's Mark Knopfler and Emmylou Harris did an album together. Have you ever heard this?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty fucking incredible album. There's a few like super like more countryish songs on there that I can't feel.
I'm not super familiar, but I have it and I've listened to it.
I mean, like I said, there's a few tracks on there that just they take a step into like a too twangy for me. But there's there's some really amazing tracks on that. Really, really amazing. Anyway, so it's probably that song. Like I'll hear that song. Which there's a song called Beachcombing, and what I think of when I hear it is the synchronistic practice of like, yeah, you know, walking along and saying, ooh, that right there, that I see some meaning right there. Look at that valuable thing that everyone walked right past, mm-hmm. You know, which is such a drastic change from how I felt about it maybe 10 years ago, you know, five years ago, you know, that day that we were on the verge of changing everything. And it's like, no, I'm walking along this for barren, you know, like this sort of.
Yeah, everyone who finds.
Postmodern wasteland looking for. And
this is what I'm saying, is we're not offering the inspiration. We're offering the wisdom of being like, oh, yeah, everyone who finds this beach thinks that they have discovered the key to eternal youth. Well, in fact, you are now trapped. And it is glorious. And there is nothing here. You're basically picking through a trash heap. But you will be so inspired. Let's just hope you have a good day job. And, you know, and that you can afford to pay $300 to come to the Olympia Sync Summit and cover some of the costs so that we can keep doing these things. Yeah. And when eventually there's 50 people who can pay that money, we can really pay our crews and people, you know, eventually, I think eventually we can be a sustainable business enterprise without being total fucking charlatans. And
yeah,
that
well, Well, it's funny. Yeah, it's like it's almost like the more. The funny thing is, I've actually. I guess this could sound like I'm just saying this, but I believe as I'm analyzing myself as I've been doing, particularly since it's like 5 a.m., I'm high and we've been talking about all this stuff. I've been in a very self-reflective mode. I believe it would be a fair statement to say, almost as we've pushed more towards business, at least I can speak for myself, as I've sort of pushed more towards business, I've sort of forced myself to be at like more and more honest. It's like, okay, whatever ambiguity I allowed myself before, because I was like, well, whatever, no one's giving me any money, no one's anything, I can just fucking, I can share what I want to share, like whatever, I can do me. Right, I could just be a guy, say my thing, and it's almost like as I feel like, well, okay, if I'm asking other people to take this seriously, I have to take this seriously, and I have to commit to,
Everything. You have to commit to every, you have to commit to things that you do not know exist
right.
yet. That's the shit. Is like when you take on leadership and holding space for synchronicity and magic to happen, you are saying, I am responsible for every fucking thing.
Right, that someone would be
From
asking, are we responsible for Ferguson? Like, come on. No. I didn't do that shit. I fucking
yes, and
We
you're
worked really
absolutely
hard to
not.
throw you guys a party, and you're like, so did you cause Ferguson?
We are absolutely not responsible for that. And we, in what we are, we're because we're not just throwing a party. We're not doing Bonnaroo.
Well, that was the distinction. I mean, I'm using that as a shorthand, but
No, but
I.
you're right. But that's the thing is, we are and we aren't. What it is you aren't and we are. None of us individually is responsible for that unless we engage in that individually. But all of us are responsible for that collectively.
Oh,
And
totally.
we have a container for exploring that that allows you to explore that dichotomy. That it's not my fault, but it's my responsibility because I can see it. And if I'm going to take responsibility for that gorgeous fucking sunset, then I'm also going to take responsibility for that black body in the streets of Missouri.
Just want to take responsibility for the sunset.
I absolutely take responsibility for the sunset, the sunrise, every fucking thing.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. There's a great Shakespeare sonnet about that. You
There's
want to
a
end this? I'll end this. I'll kick the shit out of this if you let me end this with this.
Sure, I have a darker version to add, but so go ahead. I'll shit on it with my my pessimistic version. Go ahead. Or you want me to go first? I'll go
Oh,
first.
yeah.
I'll go first. You could end it on a nice note. So we'll switch places. There's a what's the guy Malcolm McDowell from he was in Clockwork Orange. He was in this great like, it's weird.
Time after time.
What's that?
The time travel movie.
No, it's a, some TV show. I actually put it in Dropbox 42.
Mozart in the Jungle.
No, stop. It's not a movie. It's a TV show. It was like basically like a Tales from the Crypt type TV show. It was like this, like, you know, like wannabe Twilight Zone Tales from the Crypt from around the year 2000. And it's like, I think it was hosted by like Henry Rollins or some, I don't know, something weird, right? Anyway, Malcolm McDowell plays a guy who has basically like Tourette's. The psychologist thinks he has Tourette's, and he's got to do all these like rituals, right? He's got to pat his shoulder 5 times and adjust his tie 5 times and do all these like ridiculous OCD rituals. And then the psychiatrist asks him, "Why do you do that?" He says, "Well, if I do this to keep the planes from falling out of the sky, I do this to keep there to be gravity, I do this to whatever." That it was all on him, right? And I think the psychiatrist is played by Miguel from RoboCop. Anyway, so it's like this weird ass, like, offbeat TV show. But for some reason, I've seen the same episode like 7 times throughout my life. So one day I found it. I put it in Dropbox for you too because I was talking about it with somebody else. And basically, the moral of the story is Malcolm McDowell. The psychiatrist convinces Malcolm McDowell that he doesn't have to do it, so he stops doing it, and then the planes start falling out of the sky, and, like, basically the world stops ending. And then, you know...
Starts ending,
and then the twist ending, like, the twist, like, Tales from the Crypt-y Twilight Zone ending is that then the psychiatrist is like, well, you gotta keep doing it. And Malcolm McDowell's like, fuck you, I ain't doing it anymore. And then the psychiatrist is like, all right, tell me, how do I keep the planes out of the sky? How do I keep the planes in the sky? What is it, 5 times my shoulder? What was it? And then, like, he wants him to teach him all the rituals so he'll hold the cosmos together. Right? It was this idea of, like, with great responsibility comes overwhelming fucking responsibility. Like, if you want to take credit for it, all of it, you would drive yourself absolutely mad. And yet, there is this sort of, like, joke twist ending in there, which is that, in a sense, it's true. We are all responsible. I mean, I know your point was about taking responsibility for a society that would allow a white police officer to kill this boy and get off, you know, without being real riots in the streets, real revolutions, real all these things. I just feel like there's sort of strike that sort of balance there, just by relaying that story.
So I'm going to end this. I'm going to end this at the end of with this Shakespeare sonnet that I learned years ago, and I think it applies to what you said, and to this entire endeavor. The sin of self-love possesses all my eye, and all my soul, and all my every part. And for this sin, there is no remedy. It is so grounded in my heart. Methinks no face so gracious as is mine, no shape so true, no truth of such account. And for myself, my own worth do define, as I all others in all worths do surmount. But when my glass shows me myself, indeed beaten and chapped with tanned antiquity, my own self-love quite contrary I read. Self so self-loving were iniquity. 'Tis thee, myself, that for myself I praise, painting thy age with the beauty of thy days. That guy knew how to do his thing. Painting thy age with the beauty of thy days. That's what we're doing. And with that,
it's been a pleasure, sir. Talk to you soon, all right?
To all the ships ashore at sea or whatever.
Hey, so are we leaving this all the way to the end?
Do what you need to do, man.
No, I mean, no.
I don't deny anything that's happened here.
Syncbook Radio and Indiegogo Syncbook Project would like to thank James Kozak, Misty Greer, Darren Brew, Occult Fan, Rhonda, how do you pronounce it?
Bachman.
Like Richard Bachman.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Rhonda Bachman, Guillaume Simard, and Anonymous, DMCO, whoever you may be, our lovely. Maybe that's our CIA handware.
Let's hope.
Good night, man.
Good night.
Bye.
I've been working hard, trying to sing and play guitar, growing out my hair, and practicing my stare. Paid to fake it in a traveling. sing and play guitar, growing out my hair and working on my stare. Paid to fake it in a traveling band, and I'm working undercover.